So I'm a soil fertility specialist at the University of Nebraska, and about half of my time involves work in Africa. And one of the projects is called OFRA, Optimizing Fertilizer Recommendations in Africa. And as part of this, we've put together a growing database, quite large, and we're using it to better determine nutrient response functions for agroecological zones in Africa across numerous food crops. So the topics I'll address are an overview of OFRA and what we mean by fertilizer use optimization, the response function database, how we're going about doing our extrapolation, and then how we use this information for optimization at agroecological zone level. So OFRA, the intent is to provide a basis for maximizing profit from fertilizer use, especially for the financially constrained. Most of the smallholder farmers in Africa do not have much money for fertilizer use. The question is, how can you get the most profit from that small amount of money that you have? It's a project that involves 13 countries, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Ghana, Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, Malawi, Zambia, and Mozambique. And a key part of it is to determine these response functions for important food crops. And we're doing this solely from field research results. And then once we have those, we have something we can work economics with and integrate these into tools that use linear optimization. We're addressing more than 14 crops, but with the research, the field research ongoing is 14. But then there are also some intercrops, as we see in this photo with pigeon pea intercrop with maize in northern Tanzania. OFRA is funded by AGRA, the Alliance of a Green Revolution in Africa, and the money originally comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's managed by CABI, which has a management entity in Nairobi, and scientific and technical support is from the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. This is a common map that we see of the world with the Mercator projection, and we see that ice or Greenland is almost as large as Africa, right? But Africa is 14 times the area of Greenland. This is a more realistic map, which was in a recent issue of Scientific America, where we see that the area of Africa encompasses that of the 48 states of the U.S. Hawaii could easily fit in somewhere, maybe not Alaska, all of Europe, India, China, Japan, and still quite a bit of space left over. The areas that we are working, represented by these three ovals, and so quite a large area, still much of Africa that we're not covering. As far as the crop production that's represented in those areas, ranges from 96% of the cowpea production, just 17% of the wheat production. There's much more in South Africa and North Africa. And over these 10 crops, 54% of their production. So it is an area that captures quite a lot of food production. To determine the nutrient response functions, we first looked at research that had been done already, what was available, the legacy data, available research results. But we also have with each of these 13 countries with their national research organizations, two or more teams doing research in different agroecological zones. Extrapolation of results so that we can take results from similar growing conditions to apply it to our point of interest. And the feasibility of that has greatly increased in the last 2 to 3 years. For climate, we used the GIGO, or the Global Yield Gap Atlas variables. And for soil properties, we're using the Africa Soil Information System variables, soil property layers. And then we also use elevation and some other information. Our database as of now has over 4,600 geo-referenced response functions determined for these different crop nutrient combinations. There's the Ephesus map, sort of, I forgot about that. A common response function, if we look at enough data, is the curvilinear to plateau response. And this is represented here by May's response to nitrogen in Uganda. And I should say, this project is largely based, the ground for it is from work done in Uganda earlier with Noro there. But here we see to maximize yield, we need 120 kilos of nitrogen. If we want to maximize yield, profit per hectare, however, and it takes 10 kilos of grain to meet the cost of using 1 kilo of nitrogen, we see that rate drops to 44. If the fertilizer is a bit more expensive relative to the grain, it drops to 33. And recently when I was in Uganda, the rate was 44. Now with our poor farmers, if they don't have much to invest, they're going to get the best returns by capturing this steep part of the response curve. And we don't see that as an ongoing condition. We're hoping that with that improved profitability, they'll be gradually able to increase their fertilizer use and move up that curve to where they can eventually maximize returns per hectare. Another consideration in the economics is that not all nutrients applied to all crops have the same profit potential. Some options are much more profitable than others. And so if we look at this figure on the x-axis, we have the dollars per hectare invested in a single nutrient applied to a single crop. On the y-axis is the net returns to that investment. And so obviously where the curves are steep is where we're getting the best returns on the investment. So nitrogen applied to upland rice or to finger millet or bean is very profitable, at least at lower rates, as well as phosphorus applied to finger millet. And then we have some less profitable options like nitrogen applied to sorghum. Notice that here the y-axis goes up to $900. Oops, what happened? Here we have another figure, a companion figure, where the y-axis only goes up to $200. So still profitable options, but not near so profitable as those on the left. And if the farmer's poor, we want, and they have the crops in their cropping system, we want them to take advantage of those more profitable options until they can gradually increase their capacity for investment in fertilizer use and be applying at more balanced rates. Regarding our database, this map shows the points where we've been able to access data. Many of these points, of course, there's many different numerous response functions that were determined, and it's written greater than 4,500, but it's actually greater now than 4,600 georeference response functions. And again, some of these determined from past research and some from ongoing research. We standardize our response functions using an asymptotic function where yield is equal to A minus B times C to the power of N. And A is the yield at plateau for the response to that nutrient. B is the maximum response you get with the application of that nutrient. C is a curvature coefficient. It does not have units. And N represents the nutrient rate, nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur, whatever that nutrient rate might be. So the database now, again, addresses numerous food crops. For some crops, we don't have many functions, like 26 for fava beans, 27 for banana, whereas for maize, here it says 1587, but we're over 1600 now. Some crops quite well represented. Some, and especially some of the pulse crops, we need more information on. Go to different places, gaps. We're relatively strong near the equator, as you may have noticed from the map before, but for some other areas, southern Africa, for instance, we're quite weak, especially if we go beyond maize. Published works, we got information from 237 publications until now. There are 8, let's say, national databases that we're able to tap, and over 1,200 or about 1,200 of the 4,600 cases now are from trials conducted under OFRA since the project started in 2013. So again, that's the work of these research teams in these 13 countries. For extrapolation, we're using a query approach, and we're considering seven criteria. The aridity index is from GIGA, and it's precipitation relative to potential evapotranspiration. We use temperature seasonality, soil organic carbon, pH, sand content, elevation. We're using elevation rather than growing degree days, mainly because people are more familiar with elevation. And the latitude, the absolute value of latitude, that is the distance from equator because of the modality of rainfall, but then also photoperiod sensitivity with some species. When we do a query using these criteria, we normally get between 5 and 10% of the database back. And we do, when we're doing this for an agroecological zone, we select 3 to 5 or points of agricultural importance in that AEZ and do the query separately, merge the data together, get rid of duplicates, and that's the data set that we go on with. And then from that, we determine response functions for the agroecological zone. The tool that we helped to develop to help us do this works in ArcMap, written in Python. We call it the data inference tool, and it's really to help us do these queries. So we enter our point of interest, the latitude, longitude of the point of interest, and it reaches out to look for similar growing conditions and what response functions are available with those similar growing conditions. This is a figure that shows the results of a query for eastern province of Kenya, higher elevation, and it's for nitrogen applied to maize response to nitrogen when phosphorus is already applied. So we got quite a few hits. Now with the legend at the bottom, we identify each of these lines. The first three letters are for the country, and we see there's some from mostly from Kenya, but also Rwanda and Tanzania, where it found similar growing conditions. And then the numbers are the latitude and longitude. So we have a record of where each response function comes from. The heavy green dashed line represents the median of the results. When with maize, especially in some other crops, when we have enough information, we do look at the low potential and high potential. So in this case, the red heavy dashed line represents less than 4 tons expected production, maybe because of poor, not such good soil conditions, maybe because of late planting, or maybe they just don't have the resources to do expect a good crop, to invest in it, to do it well. Whereas the golden line, broken line, represents high production. And we see, although there's that big yield difference, the magnitude of the response is not that much different. They're pretty much parallel. There's a bit more response with the high potential than there is with the low potential. Here's another case for eastern Kenya, the highlands, and it's with Irish potatoes. Now, if we look at the legend, maybe you can't read it from where you are, but in this case, we found only results from Rwanda. We do have research results in the database for potato from Kenya, but none of them met the criteria. So it found 7 cases. We see that the median does represent 5 of those quite well. And then we do have an outlier at the top that goes at, you know, a much higher rate, and then one at the bottom where there is not much response. It'd be nice to have some Kenyan results for this, but is it better to try to work with nothing or use what's available? So we have used this in the tools. This is a bit messy, but what we did here, we're only looking at the effects of the B and C coefficients, that is the magnitude of the response and the shape of the response, just to see how with different agroecological zones and yield levels, the response functions differ. And there is quite a lot of difference. We don't want to easily make assumptions that the nature of this response has this curve and this magnitude. We're not able to, at this point, explain all these variations. And an unfortunate thing with our database from the past literature, often the background information was not very good. But there is a lot of variation that we encounter in the response. So we take this information on different crops and nutrients and put it into decision tools that use linear optimization that are intended to help determine the crop nutrient rate combinations that will optimize return on the smallholder's investment. It's fully field research based. We're not employing any, you know, conceptualization here. Working fully from the field research results. We can handle up to 28 response functions in a tool that is 7 crops and 4 nutrients. In a way, it works on a full farm basis rather than trying to make decisions on an individual field basis, because it is about helping the farmer allocate their money as well as their land to get them the most profit. And the input needs are quite simple. So an interface from a agroecological zone in Uganda looks like this, and this particular one only has 6 crops. But what we ask of the farmer is, how much area do you want to plant to each crop? And it might be 0, it could all be planted to 1 crop if they prefer. And what's your expected value of the crop at harvest time farm gate, including market as well as for home consumption? And then another bit of information is on the fertilizer. How much for the cost of using 1 bag of these different fertilizers, a 50-kilo bag? And then finally, and very important, is what's your financial constraint? How much money do you have available for fertilizer use? So the tool considers all the different crop nutrient combinations and comes up with a solution something like this, which this is kilos per acre. In Uganda, they're happy to work with kilos, but they prefer to use acres rather than hectares. And so we see the amounts of urea, TSP, DAP, KCL that the tool has recommended for the different crops given these constraints. And then the table below, it's estimated on average what the yield increase should be with these applications and what on average the net returns to the application would be. And then finally at the bottom, the overall expected net return on that investment. So in this case, they had invested 500,000 Uganda shillings. They got about 2 million back, so it's a benefit cost ratio of 4. Now with this approach, it's not coming up with recommendations where it's always 50 kilos, 1 bag per acre or 1 bag per hectare, but different rates. And so calibration is quite important. And so part of the enablement of extension on this is to provide them with a calibration tool that considers the volume of different measuring units, the fertilizer and its density, the application rate, the application method, row width or application width, and it finally gives a solution. Well, this container is enough to go 5.9 meters to achieve the rate that you want. Now, computers are very inadequately available in most of these areas, our target areas. So we do develop paper versions of these. At the top, there are some assumptions as to what measuring units are available to the farmers, such as water bottle caps, row spacing, fertilizer costs, commodity values. And then we have 3 levels of financial ability. The level 1 is the poorest. And there we only have recommendations for 3 crops. Those are where, in this agroecological zone, they could get the highest returns on a small investment. And level 2 then allows for more application and 5 crops, higher rates. And level 3 is finally where you would be applying to maximize net returns per hectare or per acre. We need to consider other nutrient management practices, and to integrate these into the optimization tool would be very difficult because we're working with numerous parcels of land that are, have been managed differently in the past. So what are the effects of manure application or green manure crops or importation of some organic material or crop rotation, intercropping on optimal fertilizer rate? Can you reduce the rate, fertilizer rate some because of these practices? Until now, I haven't spoken of soil test information. And there are different reasons for this, including a very weak basis for any interpretation of soil test results in regards to nutrient response in Africa. But we do consider it here. So we say if your malic 3 phosphorus is above 15 parts per million, ignore the phosphorus recommendation given by the tool. If the potassium is below 100 parts per million, then put on some extra potassium more in addition to what the tools suggest. But in nearly all conditions that I find on farmers' fields, phosphorus is less than 15 parts per million. We're quite sure it's going to be low. And in most cases, we work potassium as high. Sulfur and nitrogen response, I don't know how to predict it from soil test results. So that's where so we don't give much weight to soil test results. To develop these optimization tools, we have workshops at national level, which are attended by national researchers, extension people, industry people. And although the tool is very complex, it involves uses the add-on solver. There are parts only that need to be changed to be able to work for different agroecological zones. So we change the crops of interest and then the response coefficients in the tool. And then there's something on fertilizer maximums, but all quite straightforward and easy to do. People learn to do that quite quickly. So we do have these tools now developed for 32 agroecological zones. Next week I'll be in Ghana with our partners from the five West Africa countries, and I'm expecting that across those five countries we'll probably have another 20 tools developed. And then we go to South Africa in February. A little bit of work to be done in Rwanda and Tanzania yet. Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, we have tools working for their ecological zones. The big challenge is to get it out with extension. Now, the work in Uganda, as I said, it started. We developed a prototype there and got the funding for to take it to the additional 12 countries. And so we've been doing, or they've been doing, training of extension. And I define extension broadly to include government and non-government advisors as well as input retailers. And they say over 1,000 have been trained. We started doing this in 2012. In addition to the computer and paper versions, there is a mobile app, a cell phone app. But right now it's not functioning. our app applicators haven't been very diligent in keeping it working for us. So, thank you. I don't know of any that in Africa that are funded by, and of these that were funded by fertilizer companies. No. One issue that we have with fertilizer companies, they're very anxious to promote compound and blended fertilizers. And when you don't get a response to K, why should the farmer be spending his money on K when they could be spending it on nitrogen or something that's going to bring profit?
Down all money associated with with the fertilizer industry because money is so scarce. But I think it's, you know, I take your point from medicine. We don't want our advice coming from pharmaceutically funded people.
But the fertilizer dealers are important stakeholders in this. And we need to get them to realize that this approach, where we make fertilizer use more profitable in the long run, is going to be better for them because it'll increase sales. And rather than trying to push products that are more costly but of less benefit to farmers, is a problem. Gary?
Or?
Yeah.
And it's more than them selling premium products that aren't needed. It's selling the base products that are needed as well, but perhaps more than reasonable.
Fertilizer industries have a lot of decisions on fertilizer recommendations in Africa. I'm convinced of that. A lot of influence on it. But it is a challenge for it. In Uganda, it hasn't been too bad, but then fertilizer use isn't so great. But in some of these other countries, the companies are more entrenched and it's some issue of stakeholder engagement issue that we're just, you know, early stages on in these other countries.
Well, thank you very much. I think we'll have time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.